Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
We're hot again, okay? I go 5, 4. Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 15th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, Mariah Tinger. How you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very well. And of course, we're joined by Mr. D.R. Tucker. How you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well. Well, some places not doing so well is a little island, where U.S. citizens live, called Puerto Rico, which about 2 weeks ago was struck by Hurricane Maria. That was the worst storm to hit Puerto Rico in a long time. The island of Puerto Rico is an American protectorate, right? It is the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. It belongs to the United States. The people there are American citizens. But as it happens, before the storm hit, Puerto Rico was in a dire financial state and had been, for the way the laws are written, Puerto Rico could not declare bankruptcy. And so it was really in a terrible state. Part of the financial distress that Puerto Rico was experiencing was due to the power grid being weak. And I think that they were selling bonds and paying for the bonds with immediate revenue from creating electricity on the island. Anyway, Puerto Rico has a rather old electrical system, very fragile. And when the hurricane came through, it just knocked everything down so that at this point, I think something like half the people on the island don't have water. 80 or 90% of the people on the island don't have electricity, right? And, of course, they don't have phone service and all the other luxuries of modern life, but they don't have electricity. And so that raises the question of, in a sane world that is trying to fight climate change, the island of Puerto Rico is a great example of an opportunity to rebuild in a sustainable way. I thought it would be interesting to chat about that a little bit, because I think there's increasing amounts of discussion and buzz around how exactly you would try to help Puerto Rico rebuild in a sustainable way, because you know for a fact that there's going to be another hurricane hit it, and Puerto Rico has to be ready for it. I think that in the last couple of weeks, maybe DR, I don't know if you've got more information on this, but Elon Musk, who is sort of, I suppose we should start calling him Saint Elon Musk, who is building the Tesla, building the Powerwall battery, has put people into space. Oh, he's some kind of Superman. He has thought that he could assist in the reconstruction of Puerto Rico as an entirely green kind of not entirely green example. And that what he's saying is that he's rebuilt other Caribbean islands right before the storm. You come in with the Powerwall batteries, you have the solar panels, it's all part of technology that he can offer as a way to bring the island back to life. Did you see anything like that, Dia, or either of you?
Yes, Adolia Estevez of Forbes had a great piece in which she discussed Elon Musk having had extensive conversations with the governor of Puerto Rico, Ricardo Rossello, about coming into Puerto Rico and helping to rebuild the grid in a green and sustainable fashion. Mm-hmm. Estevez indicated that they have yet to reach an official agreement, but obviously, if they're having conversations, they could be getting very close to such an agreement. And if so, that would be, in fact, a game changer. Joe Rome of Climate Progress basically says that, you know, since Donald Trump has essentially abandoned Puerto Rico, why not have Elon Musk do the job that Trump refuses to do. And it could be a bit of a, it could be a proof of concept where, you know, in areas that are devastated by extreme weather events, Elon Musk, you know, develops a strategy for rebuilding the grid in these areas in a sustainable way, that the next time they experience an extreme weather event, you know, everybody won't be deprived of power and clean water and you know, a livable habitat, essentially. It could be something that, to quote Bill Nye's famous line, changes the world.
Well, I think that I mean, some of the buzzwords that surround this are interesting and quite applicable. So you may have heard of something called distributed generation, right? And that, again, that's just a way of describing solar panels in local communities, especially, say, isolated rural communities. Distributed generation as contrasted to centralized generation, where all the electricity comes out of a big power plant in one location, let's say San Juan, and has to be, you know, routed over the mountains by electric, by high tension wires, right? I think the most telling example, the clearest kind of metaphor for the whole thing is that countries like, well, the United States, when the telephone was invented, we wired the whole country with telephone lines, right? So you could call people, and you didn't have a telephone until you got a telephone line into your house. Of course, a place like India could not replicate that, but fortunately, you could get a cell phone, which did not require an extensive infrastructure, right? So you have this sort of distributed communication network in places like India, and they essentially leapfrogged past a certain technology. I think the same thing can happen in Puerto Rico, is instead of rebuilding high voltage wires across the island, you could put solar panels into these isolated communities with battery backup, and those locations would be essentially be what are called micro grids, right? They're a little internal self-sufficient grid, and maybe it's on a hilltop someplace in the interior of the island, but it's self-sufficient. And that is more sustainable than the situation we're in now. I mean, it those kinds of concepts and discussions are important, right?
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, the other thing is when they're rebuilding structures, rebuilding them to be energy efficient, mm-hmm. with, you know, natural daylighting and, you know, LED lights, street lights and different things that can help reduce their need for consumption and move them towards renewable. I look at Greensburg, Kansas, which was hit by a tornado and rebuilt. We've talked about this before, but rebuilt 100% green, and you know it's totally red state, yeah, and they rebuilt 100% green with this kind of, you know, energy efficient structures, and it has the highest concentration of LEED certified buildings in the country, and it reinvigorated the community.
Right, and we saw a couple weeks ago there was references to prefabricated houses that were already built for solar panels and highly insulated, all the right stuff, but they were inexpensive and could be shipped into a place like Puerto Rico or a different disaster zone and give you just that sort of efficient, energy-efficient housing, right? So again, it's another aspect.
I mean, and built quickly, too. Those prefab houses can be put up within weeks.
Yeah, and I think it's I have a feeling that Elon Musk's idea is great, but I don't think he has deep enough pockets to rebuild Puerto Rico. And I think that what will have to happen is somehow federal money would have to be provided to support a green rebuilding of Puerto Rico. And I think that's where Climate Hawks come in, by mentioning it and saying that this is something that we should be doing, right? Instead of rebuilding the old-fashioned way, the federal government should be providing money to do this kind of revival of the island. Although, yeah. Depressingly enough, I saw a headline somewhere that said that the relief package for Puerto Rico is going to come as a series of loans instead of grants, which is just disgusting.
You think of, you remember that headline from 40 years ago, a Ford to New York drop dead. It's like, yeah. Now it's Trump to Puerto Rico drop dead.
Yes. Yeah. I remember that. It was back when New York was going under. Well, there you go. Anyway, I think that I like the idea that we should not forget the plight of Puerto Rico. I mean, they're still in dire straits. A vision for a green island is one that will take months, if not years, to build, and these people are suffering now. They need help now. There are various kinds of opportunities to support that. Here in Massachusetts, there's a fund in Massachusetts that is directly supporting both people in Puerto Rico and people that come from Puerto Rico to Massachusetts for resettlement. But, I mean, those immediate needs need to be met, but we also need to present an alternative to the rebuild it the old way concept, right? We can't let these guys get away with just rebuilding the same old junk a second time. And so that's a little quest that I'm on. That's my goal for the year. All right. Well, look, the other thing is that a couple of weeks ago we talked about something called community choice aggregation. I'm sure everyone remembers exactly what community choice aggregation is, but if you don't, let me briefly tell you. It's this idea that a city or a community can choose to, the government of a community can choose to contract for all the electricity that comes into a town. And by aggregating all of the people in a town, you have more financial leverage to buy, to get a good price or to get green energy, which then comes into a community and is distributed essentially the way that it is distributed today. So it's kind of this hidden thing, but it's a very powerful tool for introducing green energy into a city. And it turns out that the city of Boston a couple weeks ago has begun the process of using community choice aggregation, and the city of Boston will contract for all the electricity that comes into Boston. Some significant fraction of that will be clean, and everyone, all the regular ratepayers in Boston will not know one way or the other, because they will be trying to keep the price the same thing as it is now. Long and short of it, I got a chance to talk to Carol Oldham, who is the executive director of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network, who testified before the Boston City Council in favor of this community choice aggregation idea. And I want to play a little bit of sound, because she's much better at explaining what was going on than I am. So let's take a listen to Carol.
So hi, Carol. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well, very well. So look, I hear that recently there was in Boston chose to do community choice aggregation. So what the heck is that?
Yeah, so they're calling it community choice energy, but basically community choice aggregation or community choice energy or green aggregation, you'll hear it called a lot of different names, which gets confusing. But it's essentially bulk buying for clean energy. So like when I moved to Boston from Brookline, Eversource was my default supplier of electricity. So I moved here and I just started getting my bill from Eversource. Under aggregation, what happens is that the city or town becomes the default supplier. So they go out and they buy the electricity and they sign contracts for it and everything. And then I still get my bill from Eversource, but it's based on what the city or town has chosen in terms of what kind of electricity. So a city or town can say, you know what, we're really focused on climate solutions, and so we're going to buy more clean energy. So right now the renewable portfolio standard requires Eversource and National Grid to get 12% clean electricity as part of the mix. What a lot of cities and towns that have done aggregation have chosen is to say, we're going to do an additional 5%. So instead of 12%, it's going to be 17% clean energy every time you turn on the lights. And the way that it works, so Boston has started the process, I will say. They've done a fantastic job. They're really thinking about, you know, there are a lot of folks in Boston who are price sensitive. And it would be, I should say, it would be obviously the biggest city or town in Massachusetts to do this. Mm-hmm. But the process starts with the city council, and then the mayor's office, is responsible for implementing it. So the city council has passed it. They passed it unanimously, which is fantastic. And basically what they said was that we want as much clean energy as we can get without people's bills going up. But because they do that bulk buying, because you're buying for whatever it is, 670,000 people, it's a lot cheaper than if, like, I was just going out and buying clean energy on my own.
Right. Wow, that's great. That's fantastic. And so the Boston study is going to probably take, what, 6 months to a year to actually implement this now?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's more like, hopefully it's more on the 6 month end.
Right.
But yeah, because basically what they have to do is that they, so then the mayor's office sort of takes it and starts running with it. And the, and we hope that Mayor Walsh will do that. Everybody who's on here, if you're on Twitter, please tweet at him or, you know, just encourage him to think about implementing Community Choice Energy or CCE. But basically, they sit down with a broker and they say, here's what we want. Make us a plan to get what we want. And then if they like the plan, it goes to the Department of Public Utilities. The Attorney General takes a look at it. So it's got a lot of consumer protection built in. So, you know, I know that probably I know that this has happened to me. It's probably happened to you. It's probably happened to a lot of the listeners. But sometimes these people will go around and they're like knocking on doors, or you'll get a postcard and they're like, we'll sign you up for more clean energy. And when you ask them, they don't know where that clean energy comes from. They don't know, you know, is it really clean or is it nuclear or is it biomass or, you know, is it something that I don't want to actually be supporting with my money? They don't know. And so this has a lot of consumer protection built in because the Department of Public Utilities looks at it. The Attorney General's office looks at it. It's just a lot. It's a lot more
secure.
Safe and secure for the customer. Yeah.
Super. And so tell me, who did you, I'm proud to say you were actually at the hearing. You spoke in the...
I was. Yeah. I got to testify. It was a great hearing. So, the Boston Climate Action Network, our Boston chapter, did a fantastic job. They had these bright yellow T-shirts printed up, and they so we were all wearing these bright yellow T-shirts. Some of us were wearing bright yellow T-shirts and a suit jacket over them, or you know, whatever that was. And it was just overwhelming support for this. They had this fabulous panel to sort of start off the hearing, where they had somebody from VCAN speak, and they had a woman who from Tufts who did some economic analysis and sort of looked at what's happened with other cities and towns that have done this in Massachusetts. And they had somebody from one of the environmental justice groups speak on that panel. And then, you know, there were sort of hours and hours of the rest of us giving testimony. It was fabulous.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, I mean, congratulations to VCAN and you for all that hard work, and congratulations to the city of Boston for making this big decision, right? That's great.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Well, thank you so much for chatting, Carol. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
So there you go. That's Carol Oldham with Community Choice Aggregation. If you live in Massachusetts and you're thinking about having your town do it, go down that path, contact her. She'll give you a hand, right? So we're going to we'll put up links to most of what we talked about on the blog. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find that on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can find the link and click through to the blog and or the SoundCloud link. You can find us, you can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, and other directories. For those of you who are aficionados, our home base is the Podbean website. That's where most people listen. You can also find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks very much for being here, Mariah.
Happy to be here.
And DR, thank you for making the time to come visit.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.